blazed with anger. I'd never heard him speak that way about his mom, and I pulled away, feeling uncomfortable.
Every day, I just sit in my dad's apartment.
He complained.
I have nothing to do, nowhere to go, nobody to talk to. And when my dad comes home, he goes straight to his computer, so it's not like we even talk.
He sagged against the couch, the anger seeping out of him.
I'm alone all the time. I don't have anybody to hang out with. It's fucking boring.
And to my utter horror and embarrassment, Tyler suddenly started crying. I'd never seen Tyler cry before. Hugging him seemed like the only option, so I put my arms around his shoulders and patted his back. I laid my head on his shoulder and turned my face so he wouldn't see me. He smelled of mint and evergreen trees, the Axe body wash I knew he used. It was simultaneously familiar and also super annoying. A pocket of irritation gathered in my belly.
You're the only person I want to be with, Liv.
Tyler dashed at his eyes with the heels of his hands.
Everything's so shitty right now. Being with you again when school starts is the only thing getting me through. I don't think I'd be able to live if I didn't have you.
I'm so sorry, I murmured, squeezing my eyes shut. He didn't know how much. A secret surge of selfishness churned in me. I couldn't break up with him now. Tyler left after a while to go golfing with his mom. I worked in the garden the rest of the morning, weeding and planting new vegetables until my mom called at noon. Then I headed over to Derek's. I sneaked in the back way, through the gate and into the backyard, and was about to tap on his door when I felt the fine hairs on the back of my neck stand up. The hot, prickly sensation of somebody's eyes blistered against my back. I looked over my shoulder, but there was nobody there. The yard was completely empty. Just behind the fence, a forest of evergreens waved lazily in the breeze. I tried to shake off the feeling. I peered around the edge of the house at the gate. It was open about 3 inches. I couldn't remember if I'd shut it when I came in. My heart leapt to a gallop in my chest. A text message pinged loudly from my back pocket, and I nearly jumped out of my skin. When I opened it, it was a picture of my face, bloody intestines vomiting from my mouth. My eyes had been whited out. "Fuck you," was scrawled across it. Goosebumps prickled along my skin, and my mouth went dry and dusty, terror clawing at the back of my throat. I looked behind me, suddenly terrified that someone was watching me. I crept up the yard's slight incline, breathing heavily. I stuffed my phone in my pocket and pressed my back against the bushes that lined the fence, letting the shadows swallow me as I moved toward the gate. Once there, I counted in my head, wiggling my fingers tensely against the smooth wooden handle. 1, 2, 3. I threw open the gate and looked around, out the front yard, up and down the road. There was nobody there. The suburban neighborhood was as quiet as you'd expect in the middle of a weekday. A lawnmower buzzed somewhere down the street. A sprinkler threw staccato arcs on the neighbor's front yard. The sound of children laughing came from across the street. A bird called from somewhere above me. My hands shook and my heart banged painfully in my chest. I sucked in deep breaths of soupy summer air and bent over, pushing my head between my knees. It took me a few minutes to stop trembling. This was ridiculous. Of course I wasn't being watched. Get a grip, Olivia. These stupid fucking picture messages, they were really freaking me out. I didn't have enemies, not that I knew of, anyway. The only person who disliked me was Tyler's friend Dan. but sending anonymous messages wasn't Dan's style. If he had anything on me, he'd confront me in front of Tyler just to humiliate me as much as possible. I stood straight and rolled my shoulders, my body tingly with adrenaline. I pulled the gate closed, making sure it was latched this time, and retraced my steps down the yard to Derek's door. Once I was safely inside Derek's room and sitting next to him on the edge of the bed, I felt better. I decided I'd blown the weird, creepy feeling of being followed out of proportion. Derek grabbed two Cokes from his mini-fridge, handing me one as he sat next to me on the edge of his bed. "I saw Tyler this morning," I said. Our feet were entwined, and I could feel the warmth of his body stretching along the side of my leg. Derek froze, the hand that held his Coke halfway to his mouth.
"Really? Where?"
"He showed up at my house. He woke me up. It was weird. He's never done that before."
"Did you break up with him?"
he asked. "Well..." I slid my fingers back and forth along the slippery metal of my bracelet, fumbling over the truth. Derek set his Coke down on his bedside table.
"You didn't."
It was a statement, not a question. "I'm sorry," I defended myself. "He started crying, and I didn't know what to do. I just thought I should wait until he's a little better."
"Shit, Liv."
Derek ran a hand through his dark curls, pulled away from me, and stood. I felt cold where his body had been.
"We can't keep hiding this. I don't even like hiding it from Madison, but at least I get it. Why are you having such a hard time breaking up with him?"
"He's fragile right now. Besides, he made it sound like the only reason he isn't throwing himself off a bridge is because of me. I don't want him to hurt himself."
"He's not going to hurt himself, Liv. He's manipulating you."
Derek crossed the room to stare out the window. He was silent for a long moment, his back to me.
"I can't be with someone who's embarrassed to be with me. I get enough of that from my family."
I stared at him, feeling lost. He was less than an arm's length away, but it might as well have been miles. The sadness in his voice made me ache. "Derek," I began, but just then the door upstairs crashed shut. Derek's and my eyes collided. Madison was home. Chapter 25, Olivia, July. "Hello?" Madison shouted from upstairs. Shit, shit, shit. How would I explain my presence in Derek's bedroom?
"What do we do?"
Derek mouthed. I lifted my hands, palms up. "I don't know." I heard Madison's footsteps in the kitchen above us and held perfectly still, hoping she wouldn't hear us. My heart smashed wildly into the walls of my chest cavity. Maybe I could sneak out the back. But just then, my phone beeped loudly. There was no way she hadn't heard that. I pulled my phone out of my pocket just as Madison barreled down the stairs. It was another picture message, this time in front of Madison's house. I was wearing the same clothes I had on now. My mouth went suddenly, sickeningly dry. I was right. Someone had been following me. In the picture, a knife was drawn, sticking out of my heart, blood dripping down my chest. The words, "You die," were written on it. "What are you doing down here?" Madison's dark eyes met mine, hot with suspicion and anger. Her eyebrows were bunched into tight knots above her eyes. Her cotton candy pink lips pursed. "Oh, hey, Matt." I forced a breezy laugh. "I was just showing Derek this crazy picture message." I held the phone out to her and she grabbed it. her face crinkling with shock. Oh my God, who sent that? I shrugged, twin emotions of relief and terror surging through me. It must be a really mean joke, Madison said, handing the phone back to me. Yeah, probably, I agreed. Derek reached for my phone, his mouth contorted, twisted around words he couldn't quite say. I tried to catch his eye, to apologize for not telling him. But who? And why? Madison said, her eyebrows scrunched up. I can't imagine anyone hating you. You're so, you know, nice, she smirked. But, like, in a good way, of course. Of course, I replied dryly. It was so like her to wrap up a compliment in a cutting remark. But at least I'd completely distracted her from the fact I was in Derek's bedroom. She'd kill us both if she found out about us. Once, when we were kids, we were playing Capture the Flag and I chose Derek for my team. She bit her arm until it bled and told her dad Derek did it. You should tell the police, she said. If I told the police, they'd tell my mom. And I couldn't have that. I'd lose every drop of freedom she'd finally given me. Besides, maybe it was Dan or some weirdo at school pulling a sick prank. I laughed. And tell them what? Somebody's sending me mean pictures? Madison laughed, too. I changed the subject. Do you want to go into town and get lunch? She shook her head. Sorry. Can't. Have to get back to rehearsal. I only came home to grab a sandwich. I pretended to be disappointed as I followed her up the stairs. Bummer. Okay, soon though, right? I threw a look at Derek over my shoulder, begging him with my eyes to understand. He wouldn't meet my gaze. I walked with Madison down the driveway. I waved as she turned to go into town. Then I ducked down a side street and circled back. Derek opened the door without a word, his mouth in a thin, grim line. I followed him meekly inside, ready to apologize, say whatever he wanted so he would stop being mad at me. I couldn't bear that I'd upset him. Derek, I began.
Please.
He held up a hand.
Can I go first?
I nodded.
I get that you don't want to hurt Tyler's feelings, and I get that you don't want to upset Madison by letting her know we're together. I even get that you don't want your mom finding out you're looking for your dad. But don't you think lying to everybody will just make it worse?
I stared at him, shocked. I'm not lying, I denied emphatically. I'm protecting the people I love. Derek shook his head.
You're not protecting anybody, Olivia. You want to know the truth, but you're not willing to be honest. Like with me, you didn't even tell me you'd been getting those messages.
I thought they would stop. And then I was going to tell you, but I don't know, I just didn't want to worry you.
But I love you,
he exclaimed, throwing his arms up in frustration.
I want to worry about you.
You love me? I stepped closer to him. A smile played across my lips.
Of course I do.
He stroked a finger down my jaw.
I promised never to lie to you, and I hope you'll promise me the same.
I leaned against him, nuzzled my neck into the soft, warm spot where his throat met his chest. I will, I promised. I'll tell everybody the truth. I'll break up with Tyler and I'll tell Madison about us. I'll even tell my mom I'm trying to find my dad. I just need some time, okay? This is the first time in my life I've been able to do things on my own without my mom telling me what to do. I need to do this my way. Please. I searched his eyes, begging him to understand. Derek leaned down and kissed me, His chest warmed mine, and I felt his pulse thrumming through me. I opened my mouth to him, pressing my body along his. I felt his resistance melt as he folded me in his kiss.
"Promise me,"
he murmured against my lips. "I promise." His hands slid under my shirt, and as he traced each nipple with his fingers, I gasped at the unexpected pleasure. We'd messed around a bit, but there was always this unspoken line we didn't cross. I ran my hands over his back, his hips, down his belly. He moaned, a deep thrum in the base of his throat. His hands dove into my hair and under my clothes, and my breath became his.
"Olivia,"
he whispered urgently. "Please," I murmured. "Don't stop." That was all it took to break his last barriers. He lifted me up, hitching me against him, and carried me to his bed, laying me down ever so gently. I trembled as he undid the button on my jeans, pulled my zipper low. I'd never felt this way before, as if my skin would burst into flames. "Derek," I breathed. My skin was hot where his hands touched me. He lowered his mouth to rain kisses from my ear to my jaw, down to the hollow of my throat. The fire between my legs spread throughout my body. He moved his hands slowly down my stomach. His fingers caressed me, stroked inside of me, memorizing my body until I felt I would scream from the ecstasy. I curled my fingers into his back and thrust my hips up, wanting more of him. He slipped my jeans off my ankles, then kicked his off, and we were side by side, naked as our need for each other. I felt vulnerable suddenly, laid bare by this need. But Derek knew my thoughts before I did. He bent over me and covered my face in butterfly-soft kisses, every one of them showing me how much he loved me, how vast that love was.
"You,"
he whispered.
"I love you."
With him, I knew I would always find my way home. For the first time in a long time, I was clean, stripped of all the lies I was weaving, the lies that tangled me in a web of my own making. "I love you too." We lay pressed together for a long time after that, his hand stroking my hair until I fell into that warm, velvety place between sleeping and awake. My phone beeped the arrival of a text from my jeans on the floor, jolting me back to consciousness. I slid off the bed and reached for my phone. If my mom messaged or called and I didn't answer, she'd freak. But the text wasn't from my mom. It was from Kendall, saying that her dad was working at home and did I want to meet him. I showed Derek the text and looked at the time. 1 o'clock.
"Do you think we could get there and back before your mom gets home from work?"
he asked doubtfully. "Yeah. Let's go. I want to find out what he's like. I can always tell her I'm having dinner with Madison." He held my gaze for a second, his face looking unhinged. I saw right there what I'd done. My blasé disregard for lying was now obvious to both of us. I turned away from him and dressed quickly. It was fine. It was just a tiny white lie. It almost didn't count. And if it took lying to get the truth, that's what I'd do.
Chapter 26 Abby. November. I woke with a jolt. My bedroom stuffy and dark. The sheets soaked with sweat. A hangover thudded in my brain, a gift from the fifth of whiskey Sarah and I had finished at our mother's grave last night. A graveyard was an odd place to start living again, but I'd found healing in Sarah's words. And when you start to heal, you can start living again. Not just existing, but actually living in the present moment, looking toward the future rather than looking back, wishing you could change what couldn't be changed. The tones on my phone chimed, reminding me I had a meeting at the hospital at noon today. A handful of administrators, OBGYNs, and surgeons were meeting to discuss Olivia's case. My stomach knotted into a bitter lump, and emotion corded my chest. My health insurance had refused to pay anymore, and the cost of Olivia's care was mounting at an incredible pace. Added to that, I was coming up to the end of my leave of absence, and my boss was now sending me daily emails, oh so politely asking me to come back to work. And with only 12 weeks until the baby was born, I was running out of time to find the truth. I stumbled out of bed and changed into my running clothes. A few minutes later, I pounded along the boardwalk. Fresh air hissed in and out of my lungs. On the way home, I saw Sadie, Lizzie's dog, nipping at the waves. Impulsively, I jogged down the sloping dunes along the rock-studded beach toward Lizzie, who was huddled in a polka-dotted raincoat near the water. She picked up a bit of driftwood and tossed it. Sadie ran after it, splashing into the water, tongue lolling. "Hi, Abby!" Lizzie called as I approached. "Hi, Lizzie!" I had to raise my voice to be heard over the roar of the waves. "I just wanted to say thank you for the orchid and the note." She pushed a wet lock of hair under her hood, water dripping into her eyes. "Oh, Abby, I wish I could do more than just send flowers. It must be dreadful." "It is," I replied honestly, "but the flowers mean a lot." I turned to go, but Lizzie stopped me. "You want to get a coffee one of these days?" She looked down, blinking fast. "I'd like that," I said, surprising myself. Lizzie smiled, her eyes warm. "Okay, enjoy your run." I waved and continued toward home. By the time I unlocked my door, I felt better. The alcohol evaporated from my blood, the groggy thud in my head gone. An hour later, I'd showered and dressed and was waiting outside the hospital boardroom when my phone rang.
"Hello, Miss Knight. This is Detective Sampson."
"Detective Sampson?" My heart sped up, hammering against my ribs so hard I felt they would crack. "Have you found anything?"
"No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get your hopes up. I just wanted to let you know I looked through our evidence and spoke to Detective McNally, and we didn't find a silver bracelet. I'm really sorry."
"Did you look at the pictures on Olivia's iCloud account?"
"We're pursuing a number of leads, Miss Knight."
I gritted my teeth, knowing that meant they'd done nothing. "Can't you subpoena her phone records?"
"I know this is frustrating, but it takes time."
"How are you doing?" I frowned, picturing Samson's icy demeanor, her impassive face, her professional detachment. "I'm not sure."
"Of course," she said. "I understand." "Do you?" I replied bitterly.
Samson didn't answer for a beat.
"Some of us never get hardened to other people's suffering," she said finally. "Killing, murder, death, it isn't an easy business. People kill for so many reasons, usually to do with control and power. The one constant we know is that the killer usually knew the victim. That's where I always start looking."
"The people the victim knew." My palm felt slick against the phone. I opened my mouth to ask her more about this, but Dr. Griffith appeared around the corner, followed closely by Sarah. I said goodbye to Samson and hugged my sister as Dr. Griffith unlocked the boardroom door. Inside, we chose chairs set neatly around a long oval table that dominated the room. Dr. Griffith sat across from us and laid a handful of skin-toned folders in front of him. Soon, men and women in business suits and white doctor's coats began to trickle into the room, quickly filling up the other seats. Dr. Griffith started the meeting, and the others spoke in turn, reciting the work being done to care for Olivia and her baby.
I let my mind drift until a tall man, the shape of a cucumber, stood and started speaking. He pulled at his pale pink tie as if it was too tight, and adjusted his glasses. Suddenly my mind snagged on something the administrator had said, and I glanced at Sarah. She looked confused, too. Wait, I burst out.
Yes, the man seemed startled.
What did you just say? About a donation? His gray head bobbed.
We've received a substantial donation toward the costs of intrauterine support, and hope you won't worry at all about the length of time, nor the level of care Olivia will receive.
A donor? Sarah interjected.
Who?
He fumbled through his notes and straightened his glasses.
An anonymous donation.
Anonymous? I repeated.
Yes, the person or persons who made this donation have asked not to have their identity revealed.
I clenched my icy fingers together on the table. Sarah reached over and squeezed my hand. Her fingernails were round ovals, smooth and pink, against my tattered, torn ones.
Who would pay for this? Sarah asked. How do they even know about it?
Well, Olivia's story was initially all over the news, he said. There's a continued interest, and we've issued numerous statements to the press, as I'm sure you know.
Will we ever find out who's donated this money? I asked, thinking of the mysterious silent phone calls I'd been getting. The administrator in the pink tie shook his head.
I'm afraid not. Anonymous is anonymous. All I can say is, if he ever decides to go public with it, you'll be the first to know.
Sarah's hand tightened on mine. The frown line between her eyebrows sharpened. She'd caught the slip as well. The administrator had referred to the anonymous donor as he. Later that afternoon, Anthony arrived with two large paper bags that smelled intoxicatingly of Chinese food.
I didn't know what you liked, so I got options, he said, unpacking little white boxes of food.
I pulled plates from the cupboard, and he dished out egg foo young, kung pao chicken, egg rolls, and fried rice. It smelled delicious, and we headed to the living room to eat. How's your mom doing? I asked.
Really well. Physically, at least. But mentally?
He blew out a breath.
I think it might be time to put her in a home.
He looked so sad at this realization. I touched his arm. I'm sorry, Anthony. I knew that saying goodbye, even just to what you thought you knew, was a difficult thing.
Thanks, he said. He took a bite of fried rice with his chopsticks. Tell me about your meeting today.
How's the baby? Really good, I smiled. Growing fast. I showed Anthony the ultrasound picture and told him about the mysterious donation and how it had relieved some of the pressure of paying for Olivia's medical care.
No idea who the donor is? He asked.
No.
I wish I did so I could thank them.
Anthony scooped up some egg foo young.
I was thinking maybe tonight we could talk to Madison.
I thought about it for a minute. Madison wouldn't have hurt Olivia. They were best friends. Kendall thinks Gavin had something to do with this, and so do I.
We can't talk to Kendall again just yet. Gavin would have us in jail for trespassing so fast we wouldn't know what hit us. Besides, I wouldn't trust that girl as far as I could throw her. And we need to talk to Madison about what Tyler told us. If she and Olivia weren't talking, we need to know why.
Chapter 27 Olivia July. When Derek and I arrived at the address Kendall had given me, I texted her that we were there. A set of ornate black gates clanged open, and we drove slowly up the driveway, past a manicured lawn hedged with shrubs to a ginormous three-story limestone house. Panic licked at my throat. I was out of my depth. I didn't belong here. It didn't matter who my father was. I didn't need him to complete my family. I already had my mom and Aunt Sarah. I should turn around, go home, forget about all of this. But suddenly, Derek was opening my door, and it was too late to change my mind. We skirted around a white van with some sort of writing scrawled across the far side and walked up the stairs. Before I even lifted my hand to knock, Kendall flung open the door. Her eyes were weirdly bright, the pupils sharp and black, and she had a huge smile on her face like she had a secret she didn't want to say out loud.
Hi. Come in. Welcome. Welcome.
She was talking in exclamation points, her voice high-pitched and creepy. I narrowed my eyes and looked at her, but she wouldn't meet my eyes. She pulled us into a massive foyer, accented with mahogany wood and expensive-looking rugs. A tall ceiling soared high above us. The house looked like it belonged in a movie. Derek's eyes widened, and I tightened every muscle in my face. I didn't want to show how intimidating it was. Fake it till you make it, right?
We'll just wait for your wife to arrive,
I heard a woman's voice say from behind a set of double doors just across the entrance foyer. Kendall slammed the front door hard behind us. I whirled around, startled, and the same polished voice said,
Is that her now?
I'll check. Wait here, please.
A deeper voice replied. A moment later, a man came out of the double doors. His thick blonde hair gleamed in the afternoon sun. He had a high forehead and very tan skin. He wore chinos and a baby blue polo shirt with a cream-colored sweater draped casually over broad shoulders.
Kendall?
He looked puzzled, but then his eyes landed on me. And that's when I knew he was my father. His eyes were the same dark green as mine, but the giveaway was the off-center cleft in his chin, just like Kendall's and mine, and a million other little things, the sharpness of his cheekbones, the curve of his nose. He was like a masculine version of me. I think he knew it, too. The blood drained right out of his face. He looked totally rattled, but he forced a smile and stuck out a hand to shake mine, and then Derek's.
Oh, hello. I didn't know Kendall had friends over.
He turned to Kendall.
Honey, I have KOMOTV in there waiting to do an interview with me. Why don't you take your friends to the game room?
Don't you want me to introduce you? Kendall said, her face bright with deceit. Gavin looked taken aback. She introduced us with an exaggerated gesture.
Olivia, this is my dad, Gavin Montgomery. Dad, these are my friends, Olivia and Derek. Olivia and I saw each other at the University of Washington a few months ago, and we were like, oh my God, we look so much alike. What are the chances of that? So I invited her over.
Kendall tossed an arm around me like we were best friends. I looked at her, totally confused. What the hell was going on?
I thought you, especially, would want to meet her, Kendall added, pinning Gavin with a mocking look.
His smile faded for the first time since he'd walked into the room, and a muscle in his jaw started to tick. He clenched and unclenched his hands rapidly. Right then, I realized two things. One, Kendall had lied to me. Her dad didn't know anything about this meeting. And two, I'd been set up. The blue of the KOMO logo on the van outside should have been my first clue. If I'd been paying more attention instead of being so focused on meeting Gavin, I would have figured it out sooner. Even I knew that if a story about a politician's illegitimate kid got out when reporters were there, it would hit the news hard and fast. Kendall is using me to ruin her father's career. Gavin grasped Kendall's elbow roughly and dragged her down the hall. The mask was gone, and any pretense of being nice with it.
Come with me,
he growled over his shoulder. We obeyed, following Gavin and Kendall down a long hallway into a grand kitchen filled with stainless steel appliances and state-of-the-art cooking technology. Skylights lined the ceiling, and floor-to-ceiling windows showed a perfectly manicured emerald lawn sloping gently to sparkling Lake Washington. A dock jutted out from the private beach, bumped gently by a luxury speedboat. Gavin let go of Kendall's arm and whirled to face us.
"Don't you want to know who she is, Dad?"
Kendall smirked at him.
"I don't really..."
"This is Olivia Knight,"
she interrupted, emphasizing my last name, and his eyes swung to mine. Derek edged closer to me, grasped my hand tightly in his. I swallowed hard and looked down. I couldn't meet Gavin's eyes because I knew if I did, I'd feel smaller. I'd feel so small, I'd disappear and never finish this mission I was on. Gavin was silent. When I finally glanced at him, his face was pinched, as if he were working out a very hard math problem in his head.
"I'm sorry. I didn't know KOMO would be here, I swear," I burst out. I didn't want him to hate me. "I'm not trying to get you in any trouble. I just wanted to meet you."
My voice wobbled and my throat closed. I was dangerously close to tears. Kendall gave me a dirty look as if I'd just tattled on her. Gavin took a step closer, his nostrils flaring. Derek's hand tightened in mine, his body rigid. An icy claw of fear scraped the back of my neck as I remembered Mom's reaction to seeing him on TV.
"Why did you want to meet me?"
he asked tightly.
"Duh, Dad."
Kendall rolled her eyes like the whole exchange was boring.
"Because she thinks you're her daddy dearest."
My face blazed with humiliation, and a sudden hurtling anger expanded inside me. I wanted to punch Kendall in the face.
"Let's go, Olivia,"
Derek said quietly. He tugged on my hand, but I refused to budge. I hadn't done anything wrong. This guy had nothing on me. Maybe he frightened Mom with his size and his wealth and his steely glare, but he didn't intimidate me. That was the old Olivia, the Olivia who let people get away with murder just to be nice. I lifted my eyes and glared at Gavin, trapped his gaze in mine. The air tightened between us, the balance of power wavering just slightly before Gavin burst out laughing. The sound startled me.
"Is that what Kendall told you?"
he asked.
"That I'm your father?"
His voice was filled with such consternation and, worse, pity, that I actually doubted myself for a minute. He crossed the kitchen and opened the fridge, pulled out a can of Coke, snapped it open, and took a long sip. He didn't offer anybody else one. He sat the can on the kitchen island next to Kendall and shook his head, tisking.
"How old are you?"
he asked, arching an eyebrow at me.
"I'll be 17 next week."
"Well, there you go."
Gavin's grin widened.
"I wasn't even in America then. My wife and I were in Italy."
He took a long pull of Coke and then shook his head.
"I'm sorry you've been dragged into my daughter's little game. Olivia, is it? She tends to enjoy playing out her fantasies. Her latest is a desire to have a sister. It looks like we might need to put her back in therapy."
"Back in therapy?
What the fuck?"
Kendall leapt up from where she was leaning against the kitchen island.
"That's such a lie! You were only in Italy later. This girl genuinely wants to find her dad, and you just might be him. You obviously fucked her mom in Portage Point."
"Watch your mouth, Kendall,"
Gavin said sharply.
"All you care about is your career,"
she shouted, her face mottled red with anger.
"Look at her,"
she gestured at me.
"Look at me. We look the same. All of us do."
"Stop it," Kendall.
Gavin snapped, his nostrils flaring.
I have an interview to do, and you will not ruin it for me.
He took a deep breath and seemed to compose himself. The pleasant, unruffled smile returned to his face, and he looked at me with unmistakable pity in his eyes.
I'm truly sorry if you're trying to find your dad,
he said.
I'm sure Kendall hasn't helped with all this. But I'm not your father. Now, I think it's best you go.
I didn't realize I was shaking until we were back in the car and driving toward the freeway. Thoughts scuttled around my brain, too fast to focus on. I couldn't figure out what exactly had just happened, and why. Only that Kendall had set me up. I felt sick and betrayed. I'm done, I finally said. You're totally right. I'm going to tell my mom the truth. She'll freak out, but whatever. What's the point of this anyway? I don't want to waste another second on that man. Derek glanced at me.
You sure?
Something mischievous glinted in his eye. I think so. Why? Derek pulled an empty Coke can from his coat.
I took this from the kitchen.
He darted another glance at me.
Gavin was drinking from it? You can send this into a lab to get DNA evidence. You'll know for sure whether he's your dad or not. And once you know that, once you have actual evidence, he'll have to tell you the truth about everything.
Chapter 28 Abby November It had started raining, so Anthony and I decided to drive to the Stokes's rather than walk. By the time we pulled up, night had fallen in earnest, a cool, velvety mist blanketing the suburban road. Anthony parked across the street and turned off the engine. He scraped one hand over his beard uncertainly, then said, "Do you mind if I do the talking with Madison? I know you've known her practically her whole life, but I've done a lot of interviews. I know how to get information out of people. Will you trust me?" I looked at him, traced with my eyes the lines that life had left on him. Like my own, they were the scars, the residue of loss. Hadn't Anthony proved I could trust him? And anyway, maybe you could never know all someone's hidden sides. Like an aparagon, a polygon that looked on the surface like a circle, but with an infinite number of sides. I touched his hand, skimmed the warmth with my fingertips, and raised my eyes to his. I felt the connection between us tighten a notch. "I trust you," I said. Anthony smiled, an ironic quirk of his lips. "My wife used to say that." "You're married?" I drew back, shock rippling through me. There had been no sign of a wife at his house. No picture of domestic bliss. I'd assumed he was a confirmed bachelor and caretaker. "Sorry, my ex-wife," he clarified with a wry grin. "She's somebody else's wife now." He chuckled, but it sounded forced. "She couldn't deal with my job. Said I was too invested in my clients. And when my mom moved in," he lifted his shoulders, "she wanted me to put her in a home. Maybe it would have been better to do it back then." He looked sad for a second, his eyes haunted. "You did what was right for your mom at that point in time. You'll never regret the time you've had with her." Anthony smiled at me then, a wide smile. It lit up his whole face, turning his pale eyes an arresting shade of bottle green, like the color that budded on the stems of a winter tree. He pushed a hand through his hair and blew out a breath. "Thanks, Abby." We got out of the car and crossed the soggy front lawn to the porch. It was colder than usual for this time of year. Jen opened the door, her face pale and drawn. She was wearing black yoga pants and a form-fitting pink T-shirt. She looked surprised, but hid it well, the poker face of a doctor. "Abby!" Her eyes darted between Anthony and me,
and she gave me a quick one-armed hug. She smelled like baby powder deodorant and something sharper, the stale stink of cigarette smoke. "Why don't you come in out of the rain?" she said. She was trying to sound glad to see me, but I knew she wasn't. I'd brought my tragedy to her door. An acerbic anger sliced through me, burning away my ability to be intimidated. In its place was a brazen sort of courage, the sense that for the first time in my life, I didn't give a fuck what Jen Stokes thought of me.
"Good evening, Mrs. Stokes," Anthony said. "I'm Anthony Bryant. I work with the Seattle Police Department. We'd like to ask your children a few questions."
Jen paled.
"The Seattle Police Department?"
Her eyebrows scrunched.
"Yes, we're looking into Olivia's case."
"Olivia's case?" she asked faintly.
"We are following up on a few things," Anthony replied.
"Mom?" I heard Madison's voice. "Who is it?"
Jen exhaled loudly. "Derek isn't here, but Madison's watching TV."
She fixed me with a look that told me then and there our friendship would never be the same.
"I know things are really difficult for you, Abby, but please don't drag my children into this. They don't need to suffer, too."
I drew back, stung. I hadn't spoken to Madison or Derek since...
My mind tripped and froze. Derek. Could the mysterious D on Olivia's phone be Derek? My stomach tightened. Before I could reply, Jen turned on her heel, heading through the living room to the den, where Madison was slumped on the couch, watching a rerun of Game of Thrones. Madison's eyes were bloodshot, as if she hadn't stopped crying in weeks. Her dark hair was a bird's nest of tangles. She bit a corner of her mouth that was already ragged and bloody and stared at me, her eyes fathomless pits of despair. Anthony moved past Jen to sit on the couch next to Madison while I leaned against the wall by the TV and watched them.
"Hello, Madison," he said. "I'd like to talk to you about Olivia."
"Sure."
Madison looked at her mother, but picked up the remote and turned the TV off. Did Olivia seem different at all, upset about anything before she fell?
"No, she seemed fine."
"Okay. Did she tell you about the picture messages she was getting?"
"Messages? I saw one psycho one, that's it."
"When was that?"
"Dunno, June."
"Did she say who she thought it was from?" Madison shook her head.
"No, it was more like, you know, a joke. It wasn't a big deal. Just somebody at school messing around. She never said anything about it again."
Her voice trailed off. "What about Tyler? Where was he the night Olivia fell?"
"At the barbecue."
"The whole night?"
"Yeah. I mean, he didn't get here till like 10. But yeah, he was there."
"Why weren't you and Olivia speaking?" Madison pressed her lips together and picked at a tiny piece of skin on her thumb. After a second, the bit of skin broke loose from her thumb, and I watched as a drop of blood oozed from the nail. She brought her finger to her mouth, sucked the blood away. "This is important, Madison. Not telling us makes it look like you're hiding something." Something played across her face, a pull of regret, maybe sadness, but she didn't answer. She just kept pulling at that hangnail, watching as more and more blood rolled along the crease of her fingers, pooling in the palm of her hand. Anthony narrowed his eyes at her and changed tactics. "What is your relationship with Olivia?" Her chin jerked up and her eyes widened. She looked startled by the question.
"What do you mean? We're friends. Best friends."
"More than friends?"
"Jesus Christ!" Jen exclaimed. She pushed herself away from the door and crossed in two angry strides to stand like an enraged bull next to Anthony. "I've had just about enough."
Madison started to shake.
"No," she breathed. "No way! It wasn't like that with us."
Anthony ignored Jen.
"Okay."
He changed direction fast.
"But your brother, now, he was maybe more than friends with her. How did you feel about that?"
Madison stared at him defiantly, her jaw thrust out, her lip quivering slightly.
Anthony leaned toward her so he was directly in Madison's face. "Did you push Olivia off that bridge?" His eyes blazed, his voice harsh.
"That's enough!" Jen roared. "You need to go! Now!"
Anthony ignored her. He kept his eyes fixed on Madison, whose face crumpled as she started to sob.
"No!" Madison cried, ignoring her mother. "No! I would never hurt Olivia! She's my best friend, okay? Fine, yes, we had a fight and we weren't talking, but it wasn't forever or anything. We would have made up."
"Stop this now," Jen shouted, "or I'll call my lawyer."
"No, Mom, it's okay," Madison said. She sniffed and shook her head. "If somebody hurt Olivia, I want to help."
"Why did you and Olivia fight?" I took over, playing good cop.
"Because..."
Madison's eyes were shiny with tears, little drops of agony pouring from her eyes.
"Because she lied to me about Derek. She never told me she was with him. I mean, she lied to everybody about everything, even you."
She pinned me with a look that somehow conveyed both her disgust and her pity.
"You thought she was such a good little girl, going to school, going to swimming, then straight home to do her homework. But she fooled you. Every day, right under your nose, she was here, fucking my brother."
"What are you talking about?" I whispered. Madison laughed harshly.
"She hated your rules. She just didn't have the guts to tell you. She was tired of being a good girl.
Did you know she quit swimming? And she quit her job volunteering at the nursing home before she even started? It was easier to lie, and I thought it was fine. Until she lied to me, too. That was the last straw."
"Did you know she was pregnant?" Anthony asked.
"No."
Madison shook her head, her lank, unwashed hair swinging around her face.
"I swear I didn't. All I knew was she chose Derek over me, and I hated it. I felt betrayed by her. But I didn't hurt her, I swear. Last time I saw her, she was walking home."
Anthony's phone rang just then, and he stood quickly. "Excuse me, I have to take this." He stepped into the hallway, and Madison eyed me warily. "Did she tell you about Gavin?" I asked.
"Who?"
Madison looked confused. "Her dad."
"No. What are you talking about?"
I struggled to process that. Olivia hadn't even told her best friend about finding her dad. Maybe it wasn't just me she'd closed herself off to in her final months.
"If there's anything you can remember..."
Jen interrupted again. Her cold tone matched the look in her eyes.
"She's already told you everything she knows, Abby. I think it's time you left."
"Abby?"
Anthony said from the door. His eyes looked tense, strained.
"Ready to go?"
In the car, Anthony buckled his seatbelt, his mouth pinched angrily. "That was the Seattle chief of police," he said. "He's just asked me to meet him in his office tomorrow."
"Why?"
I asked. Anthony pulled onto the street, the tires spinning against the loose gravel as he punched the gas a little too hard. I glanced in the wing mirror. The downstairs light was on at the Stokes' house, and a dark shadow moved across the curtains. Derek was home. Anthony's voice, coiled tight as a wire, cut through my disbelief. "He wants to discuss allegations that I've been impersonating a police officer." I huffed out the name as if it were a cuss word.
"Gavin."
That was my first thought, too.
Chapter 29 Olivia. July. "Hello?" I pushed open the Stokes' front door. I knew Madison was at the beach with Peter. I was meeting them there in a bit. But just in case, I thought I'd better be careful.
"Down here,"
Derek called from his room. I walked down the steps, and as I turned the corner, there was Derek holding a pink cake with blazing candles, a party hat tipped at an angle on his head. a goofy smile lit his handsome face.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Olivia. Happy birthday to you,
he sang. I clapped my hands in delight and ran to him. You remembered. I threw myself at him, and he deftly moved the cake out of the way, setting it on the edge of his dresser before I managed to dump it onto the ground.
Wait, blow out the candles,
he said, laughing. I made a wish, obviously for Derek to be in my life forever, then blew them out in two breaths, which was fine. Everybody knew those wishes weren't real ones. Derek leaned down and trapped my lips in a delicious kiss.
How could I forget your birthday?
He murmured against my mouth. His breath lifted the hairs of my neck as he trailed kisses from my ear to the hollow of my throat.
Here.
He handed me a small, wrapped present.
Open it.
I unwrapped the pink paper and lifted the lid on the box. Inside was a tiny silver heart charm with our initials etched on either side.
I know you always wear the bracelet your mom got you, so I thought you could add this charm to it.
I love it. I slipped the charm on the bracelet and threw myself at him so he went crashing backward onto the bed. He covered my face with tiny, gentle kisses, his breath warm against my skin. I looked in his eyes and felt like I was dreaming. But I was awake, and he was all I could see. He made me feel whole, like there was nothing else I needed. He pulled me close, tucked me tight against his chest. I knew I needed to meet Bannison at the beach, but I didn't want to leave yet. I love you, I whispered, tilting my head to look into his eyes. He leaned down and kissed me on the nose.
I love you more.
We lay like that for a moment, and something passed between us that I would never forget. My future. For all my lack of attention to it earlier, the cake was beautiful. It had layers of chocolate cake and a pale pink frosting decorated with pastel balloons. Derek grabbed a wad of toilet paper from the bathroom and we used it as napkins as we ate giant wedges of cake with our bare hands. Toilet paper is a plate, I joked. Classy.
Hey,
he laughed, bumping me with his shoulder.
If it means I don't have to leave your sexy body to run upstairs and get plates and forks, I'm all for it.
He swallowed and licked the frosting from his lips.
So, what are your birthday plans today?
Well, I'm meeting Madison and Peter at the beach pretty soon, and then later my mom's taking me out to dinner at this fancy French restaurant in Seattle.
That's good. You said you wanted to go somewhere new, right?
Yeah. I'm just surprised, because she's always afraid to go into Seattle, like it's this vortex of evil.
What made her change her mind?
I shrugged. Dunno. But the really good news is she finally said I can get my license, so I've made an appointment to take my test next week.
Yay!
I was so excited, I accidentally squealed a little. Can I practice in your car?
Sure, as long as you don't crash it.
He elbowed me playfully. I threw a pillow at him. I'm not that bad. Derek ducked and laughed just as my phone rang.
Olivia?
It was a strong, masculine voice, one I almost recognized, but not quite. Yes?
This is Gavin Montgomery.
Oh, hi, Mr. Montgomery. I looked at Derek, stunned. He moved closer, and I held the phone away from my ear so he could listen, too.
I wanted to invite you to have lunch with Kendall and me today. I'm sorry I was short with you last week, and I thought lunch would be a perfect opportunity for the three of us to get to know each other a little better.
My mind raced. Mom and I wouldn't go out for my birthday dinner until after she was off work. I'd have to come up with a good lie for why I couldn't go to the beach, but this was too perfect to miss. Works for me, I said. We arranged to meet at the Black Cat Diner in Laurelwood, and I hung up. Did you hear that? I squealed. He wants to meet me. Maybe he'll tell me the truth now. Derek nodded and chewed a mouthful of cake, his eyes never leaving mine. What? I wiped at my mouth self-consciously.
Nothing.
He shook his head, his eyes gleaming hungrily. Did you hear what I said?
Yeah. We have another hour before we have to go.
He reached up and pulled me to him, and I smiled. Chapter 30. Olivia. July. Derek turned the Mustang into the Black Cat's parking lot and parked at the very back.
Should I come in with you?
He asked. I hesitated. If you don't mind, I'd like to talk to him on my own. Derek bit his cheek, and I could see the struggle playing out across his face.
All right,
he said.
But if you need anything, call me. I'll wait right here.
I nodded, leaned across the console for a kiss, then got out and slammed the car door. Inside, the diner was decorated in 1950s decor with black and white checked linoleum and shiny chrome fittings. Candy red booths lined the perimeter, while high-seated chrome tables filled the center. Pictures of Elvis, Marilyn Monroe, Clark Gable, and a series of other famous 50s actors dotted the walls. "I Get Around" by the Beach Boys sang dimly on the speakers. I wanted to laugh out loud. A handful of customers were eating burgers dripping with grease and thick yellow fries. Gavin was already there, sitting in a back corner booth, hunched over a steaming cup of coffee. He was wearing a black trench coat with the collar flipped up, and a blue mariner's hat pulled low over his forehead. He looked ridiculous. Kendall was nowhere to be seen. I stopped in the entrance, a sinking feeling twisting in my gut. Suddenly, I understood. Kendall wasn't here, and I'd bet every one of my swim trophies she didn't even know we were meeting. I tossed my bag onto the seat and scooted into the booth so I was facing Gavin. He looked at me, that creepy wide smile stretched across his mouth. Before he could speak, the waitress came over. She had zits and braces, lanky black hair and black, loose-fitting clothes under a dirty black work apron. A shadow of disgust passed over Gavin's face, but he looked away quickly. "Just a Coke," I said, catching her eye and smiling. I hoped she hadn't seen Gavin's look. She disappeared and returned with a frothy glass of Coke a minute later.
"So,"
Gavin began. "Kendall isn't here, is she?" I interrupted. Gavin looked at me over the rim of his coffee cup as if every person he dealt with was so dumb, and he was so superior he couldn't help but be surprised when somebody actually had half a brain cell.
"No."
"You lied to me." He laughed, a dry, horsey sound.
"Get used to it. Everybody lies. It's just a question of degree."
"Lies are for cowards and thieves. I'm neither, so let's cut the bullshit. Are you my dad?" I was done being Little Miss Nice Girl. It hadn't worked so far, and all I wanted was the truth so I could move on with my life. I needed to know why Mom had lied about him. Gavin choked on a gulp of coffee and dabbed daintily at his chin.
"Okay."
He recovered smoothly.
"No, of course not. And if we're dispensing with formalities, I'll just say I want you to stay away from my daughter. She's in a very fragile state of recovery right now, and I don't want you upsetting her."
"Recovery?" Gavin tilted his head and studied me.
"Kendall's a very troubled girl. She had a complete meltdown last year and tried to swallow a bottle of oxycodone,
We had to have her committed for her own safety. I'm guessing she never told you.
I struggled to keep my face blank. Was he telling the truth? I couldn't imagine sassy, confident Kendall in a mental hospital. There was something just slightly unbalanced about her. She was the kind of girl you'd worry would stab you in the back if you took your eye off her for too long.
Well, it's true,
he said.
And then it was rehab and then months of therapy. So all this drama isn't good for her. I'm afraid it'll set her off again and she'll end up right back in the hospital.
He pulled a checkbook and a pen out of his coat pocket and started writing.
Kendall's on a mission to destroy me,
he continued. He shook his head.
Maybe she's not getting enough attention, or maybe I spoil her, I don't know. But right now, her mother and I need to take care of her.
He pushed the check towards me, but I refused to look at it. You want to pay me to stay away from Kendall? I said, stunned.
If you want to look at it that way, then yes. It's for Kendall's own good, and yours.
I exhaled, then reached up and pulled my hair back into a messy knot, then crossed my arms over my chest and assessed Gavin. So, actually, you're paying me to disappear so nobody finds out I might be your daughter? Gavin didn't answer. He pushed the check toward me. I peered at it. The zeros at the end made my spit stick in my throat. It was enough for college. Enough so my mom wouldn't have to scrimp and save so much, always worrying about my future.
Go on. Take it.
He encouraged me.
I know you'll be smart about it. You seem like you have a good head on your shoulders.
I scowled at him. If I had a good head on my shoulders, it was because of my mom. And right then, I realized that whatever had happened between her and Gavin must have been really bad. She must have hidden the truth to protect me. I ignored the check and leaned back against the cherry red vinyl. It was cold against my bare neck. Is this what you did to my mom when she got pregnant? I asked. Did you pay her to take care of it?
You don't know what you're talking about. Take the check and leave this alone.
Fuck you, I spat, leaning forward sharply. The words felt foreign on my tongue, poisonous, fizzing like a chemical that belonged under the sink. Gavin looked surprised but covered it well. You know when I met you last week, I said, you were drinking a can of Coke? Well, I took that can, and do you want to know where it is now? Gavin looked confused, so I barreled on. It's at a DNA lab, along with a swab from my mouth, so you might as well tell me the truth now. Otherwise, when I get the results back saying you're my father, and they will say you are, I'll take them straight to KOMOTV. I wonder how that would look for your precious image, especially since it's an election year. Gavin's lips tightened. Or is it your wife you're really worried about? I taunted him cruelly. Somewhere inside my brain, I was wondering who this new person was. She didn't sound like me at all. That's what Kendall thinks. She said you're scared of losing her money. Either way, she'll find out too, so why don't you just cut the bullshit and tell me the truth? Gavin's nostrils flared and his eyes narrowed. The smarmy smile he'd had on his face since I first arrived dropped, and I realized it was a mask, a facade disguising the real Gavin Montgomery, who wasn't as charming or as powerful as he liked to think.
Fine. You want to know the truth?
His lip curled slightly.
Yes, you're my daughter. But it doesn't change anything.
I sagged back in my seat. Suddenly, surprisingly, I wished he'd said no. It was much easier to love the father of my imagination. There was nothing to love about the man in front of me.
Look,
he continued, as if he hadn't just cast my childish hopes and dreams into a pile of nuclear waste.
I had an affair with your mom right before I got married, and I didn't want my fiancé to find out. So I gave your mom some money to get an abortion.
I looked at him and felt empty inside. I'd wanted to find my dad to fill this dad-shaped hole in me, and instead I'd found him. He'd ruined the image of a dad I'd built over the years, a hero who might be capable of loving me. In reality, he was much smaller, more imperfect than what I'd created in my head. What happened then? I asked. What'd you do? He shrugged.
Nothing. She told me it was done. She said she'd gotten the abortion and I went back to Seattle. That was the last I'd heard of her until you showed up on my doorstep.
The pieces slowly slotted into place. Mom must have told him she'd get an abortion and then, lucky for me, changed her mind. He'd underestimated her. People did that a lot. But my mom was strong, stronger than people gave her credit for. And she was remarkable. Raising me all by herself was remarkable. She gave me everything she never had just because she loved me. Every single day of my life, I'd always known that she was proud of me and that I could do whatever I wanted with my life.